everyone, welcome to the Wrestling Culture Podcast. Dave Musgrave here with Dylan Hales to bring you more fun with the Greatest Wrestler Ever podcast. Not podcast, but the contest, I guess. How are you, Dylan?
Project, contest,
Project, that's the word I was looking
podcast,
for.
all the
Project
above.
Cast.
I'm great, Dave. We haven't done one of these in quite a while.
Yeah, I think New Year's was the last time we did, maybe. We might have done
Yes.
one
Yeah,
since then, but
so we're behind the curve, but you've gotten some new hardware,
yep, I've got a nice headset here.
so we're gonna track along on this and probably do some other things here pretty soon, I think. So,
Yeah, I feel like Rick Steiner with a microphone sticking out of my
curiously, Rick Steiner's not on your no. So what we're going to do here is obviously as we record this, it is April the 30th at like 11:30 as we're doing this at night.
Yes,
So.
this very moment, probably like about an hour ago, is the 16-year anniversary of my moving to Ontario, my getting into Toronto for the first time.
That's kind of crazy. That's an interesting addendum there.
Isn't it though?
It really is actually
Yeah,
because
it was
that
a Saturday as well.
I think that probably speaks to some realities of your ballot in terms of like one of the things that I talked about when I did the lengthy show that I did with Chris Elner is sort of like the connection that of course my family had with Terry Funk. And I think we'll
Calling that
probably
show lengthy is like calling Sky High Lee Tall.
I think we will discuss some of your some perhaps some of the picks on your list that reflect where you've lived and maybe your own experiences as we go through.
And I want to say, like, I'd kind of been itching to do like a full ballot show, but the whole thing is out now. And you know what? So much has been said, and I've enjoyed so much, including the stuff that you and Chris did. Like, it was like the best stuff I've probably heard from either of you guys, including anything that involved me, as far as I'm concerned. So, which I don't mean to slight our show. I just really enjoyed it that much. So.
Well, I love doing it. I would note that Dave and I, sometime back, I guess it was a couple years back, did our sort of top 50 version of the Greatest Wrestler Ever, which we did, on the show here on a much older version of the Wrestling Culture Podcast. It's out there in the ether. I don't, our, you know, you could find it over at the PWO-PTBN feed. I don't think that things are exactly the same from those lists.
Nope.
But there's probably some similarities. I think it might be an interesting experiment to go back and look and see where, if at all, there are any radical differences.
Yeah.
But
Well, I'll tell you, having that list actually made it a lot easier to formulate one now, so.
that's a see, I didn't even that's actually an interesting thing, and maybe we'll touch on this before we get into your list here. I did not even go back and listen to that show, which you would think that I might have done that. I didn't. I know other people did, and other people kind of told me that throughout the process that they found it helpful.
I did because I didn't have a written copy of it anymore, so I actually went through and listened to it, so.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm proud of the show. I'm happy with it. I thought it was really cool that we did it. But I
You know what?
don't
It was actually show number 50.
50. Yep,
Yeah.
that's why we did it because it was the 50th episode we did. I just think it's kind of interesting that. I didn't pay any attention to my own list when I redid it just a few years later. I don't know why. You'd think maybe that I would have, but I honestly did not. So what we're going to do on this show is we're kind of going to do two things. The first thing that we're going to do is for people who listen to the Goodwill Wrestling series that our buddy Will did, they know that. What Will sort of did was he's done a series of shows with the Death Valley Driver guys, my brothers, Brian and Elliot, some other people, where what he did is they went through the top hundreds of these individual people's ballots sort of in a rapid fire way, but with a focus on individual candidates that sort of stand out, like somebody that maybe is kind of uniquely high on a ballot, or somebody that may be uniquely low, or somebody that's just uniquely there.
Yeah.
I think we're going to try and follow that format for the first portion of the show. And then in the second portion of the show, because as we record this, the GW is wrapped up just a few hours ago. The final reveal was done in terms of the last two, the number two and the number one. We're going to do a, you know, some quick musings and reflections on the overall process. I think it's going to be interesting there because I think Dave and I sort of come from different places, both in terms of how involved we were, but also maybe even in terms of how we viewed the project at the end of the day. So that'll be sort of the second part of the show. But the first part of the show is going to be me putting Dave on the hot seat. So,
and you're Dave, going to read off my list.
without any further ado, unless you have any comments to make before I jump in here, nope. I'm going to start reading. And, you know, what I'll do is I'll read them in segments of 10, and I'll probably pick out one or two, maybe three or four, depending.
I'll make a note here and there as well, obviously.
Let Dave make a case or talk a little bit about these guys. So, number 100 on Dave Musgrave's ballot, Andre the Giant. Number 99 was Greg the Hammer Valentine. 98 was Giant Baba. 97 was Akira Hokuto, or Hokuto if you're me and don't pronounce their names right.
That's how I pronounce it, and I don't believe anyone who says otherwise.
96 is Pat O'Connor. 95 is Davey Boy Smith. 94 is Lioness Asuka, or however the hell you want to pronounce it. 93 is Bill Dundee. 92 is Brock Lesnar. And 91 is Sabu. Now, as I look at this, you know, there's several things I could comment on, people that I did include, people that I didn't include. I think probably the thing that jumps out the most to me, Dave, and, you know, not that I don't want you to talk about some of these other people if you want to, but Davey Boy Smith, he's a guy that I don't think, other people voted for him. You were hardly the only person to vote for him. But he's somebody that I don't think would intuitively be a person that a lot of people would immediately think he's one of the 100 best wrestlers ever. So I'm curious why Davey Boy Smith ended up placing on your ballot.
Yeah, you know, and now that I think about it, like, you and Chris and Charles and Childs, none of you listed him, and I'm pretty sure he's not coming up on the shows that Steven and Tim did that I'm listening to currently. So, I'd say, everyone thinks about Dynamite with the British Bulldogs. I actually love the Bulldog stuff when I go back and watch it. And he really kept up there for a number of years. I actually, in the process of watching this, watched a Jim Breaks and Young David match. And he was good there. He was good in Stampede. And probably the thing that puts him over the top is people. I think people forget that he was really good in 1995 to 1997. The European title match with Owen, the matches with Michaels, the matches with – I think he had a good match with Brett as well. And just pretty much everything he did during that period I really enjoyed. Mostly enjoyed the Hart Foundation run with the team USA versus Canada thing, when he and the Hart Foundation would be celebrating and he'd be doing wheelies with Brett in the wheelchair. So,
yeah, I mean, I actually really like a lot of that stuff too. I don't think Davey's really a bad pick for the end of a list. And I agree with you. I think he's actually kind of an underrated mat wrestler. You mentioned that the match with Jim Breaks is Young David. I absolutely love that match. So, I'm not going to pick any of that apart. One other thing that does stand out to me as I look at the bottom of this is there's a lot of guys who I would categorize here in this bottom 10 as being unique or being what I would call sort of presence candidates, or at least that would be my instinctive bias. That would be guys like Andre, Brock, and Sabu. Was that something that, you know, you sort of that spoke to you as a voter, influence, presence? Or was this a case where, you know, these guys just happen to be people that you might think of that way, but you think they have a bigger case that goes beyond just that?
Andre, there's a presence thing. I also just really enjoy some of his stuff when he was young, like that Strong Kobayashi match. Watching the limb work in that is just fascinating. Like, he didn't need to be doing that stuff, and that's what makes it so much better. and there's a young match against with him against Vachon from Montreal as well. Baba is actually really weird because as I've listened to everyone else, I realize how high people have him. And I thought I'd be like snickered at for even having him at 98.
Oh, I had him like 30.
Yeah. And what really stands out for Baba with me is one of the things I'm doing kind of as one of five, six, maybe 10 projects I have on the go of stuff I'm trying to watch is I'm watching, I want to watch all the All Japan Triple Crown title matches, but also all as many title matches as I can get from before the Triple Crown was made. So basically, I have a 19 June 13th, 1974 match I watched with him and Pedro Morales, and it is awesome. And it is so cool to watch Baba in that. There's this little thing he does where Pedro punches him in the stomach, and he does a front bump off it, and he does it like a couple times through, and then at the end does it like three times right in a row, and then hits the running neck breaker and pulls out like a almost a banana peel win over the smaller Pedro. So that guy was great. And
Yeah, I love 70s Baba.
yeah, and Sabu, to me, I one thing that surprised me is how many people had Necro Butcher. I think I would have considered him if I'd known that I was allowed. But I actually thought people would think that he wasn't a relevant candidate, and apparently it gives me a lot of reason to revisit his stuff. But Sabu to me is my Necro Butcher on this list. When you watch the stuff of him in 1994, the presence he had and the just the how crisp everything he did was, I don't think I've ever seen intensity like that ever.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's clearly one of the most unique wrestlers of all time. And if you're somebody who favors uniqueness, and I did, as I talked about on the shows I did with Chris, that does matter. I mean, one thing I've always said about Sabu is, to me, he's a guy where I would watch Sabu wrestle anyone. Like, I don't know if the match is necessarily going to be good, but I will watch him wrestle anyone. He's one of those guys like Abdullah the Butcher, like Necro Butcher, oddly enough, where they have that aura and that presence, and it just makes them imminently watchable no matter what the circumstance. Either you want to see it because you know it's going to be a fucking disaster car crash, or you see it, or you want to watch it because you think it's going to be great, but you want to watch it. And I think that is a quality that more wrestlers today could have. So, all right, let me move on to your 90 through 81 here. So,
Yes, please.
you're 90. And I'm gonna needle you a little bit about some of these when I ask the
And
questions here.
I do have a good reason for some of them being where they are as well.
Well, and I suspect I know what that reason is. So,
Yeah.
number 90 is El Satanico. 89 is Jaguar Yokota. God, I can't pronounce anybody's name. 88, Jim Breaks. 87, Chigusa Nagoya. 86, Ricky Dozen. 85, Kazuchika Okada. 84,
Oh,
Sean
I got trouble
Waltman.
coming to me there, don't I?
Well, we'll get to it. 84, Sean Waltman. 83, Hiroshi Tanahashi. 82, Jack Briscoe. And 81, Bull Nakano slash Nakano. That's what I call her,
Yeah.
and I can't not do it. Okay, now
Well,
what
I'll get cut right to what it is with some of them. It's honestly that I didn't get enough viewing in for it, and I kind of decided late in the game that I would put in a ballot. My brain has just been elsewhere sometimes with some of this stuff, and I really wish I'd been going through it all along. But I really need to visit more El Satanico and more Jim Breaks. But I watched enough that I felt at least getting representation of them on my ballot was important. So.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not gonna needle you any more than that because I think that there's something to be said for including them. It's kind of like Pat O'Connor, who was in your bot, like I think 96.
Yeah.
I know you well enough to know that if we had like 50 Pat O'Connor matches, he might be in your top 10.
Absolutely.
So
Yeah.
a big part of it is footage and whether you know there's a limit to how high you can go on somebody, at least in my view. If there's not enough of their prime on tape. So
Or you haven't watched enough of it.
correct. All right. There's kind of two things that stand out to me. One is that this is a huge block of Japanese wrestlers. I mean, the majority of them here are Japanese. And
You know, I when I really think about it, Japanese might be my favorite wrestling. I mean, I think that's really what it ends up coming down to, so.
well, hold on to that because I'm going to make a broader observation when we get to reflections on the list that I really am interested in your thoughts on. And I, you know, the New Japan guys, the modern New Japan guys, I'm going to go ahead and let you have the floor on them. They didn't make my ballot. I, you know, people, look, it's no secret that I'm not the hugest fan of Okada and Tanahashi. Having said that, I don't think they're outrageous people, especially Tanahashi, to put on a list just because he's been around for so long. If you like the style, it makes sense. But I do want to give you a chance to sort of talk about these two guys who you included that were nowhere near my list. So
yeah.
Talk about that those top New Japan stars.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, I enjoy Okada and Tanahashi enough that I could have had them higher, honestly. But I felt like I have no problem with anyone that I do have above them. Okada, I think, actually, you know, one of the things that he's been good for a long time. Like, he was good before he became a main eventer in New Japan. Like, some of his it was almost young boy stuff for them. But I saw him in 2007 in Toronto area, and he was good then. So he's been someone who's been good his entire career, and I think he's great now. One of my recommended match for him is against AJ Styles in July 2014, the 2014 G1 Climax with him. I thought their spots really worked well against each other. Tanahashi I've liked for a long time. Couldn't see having him higher on my list, but I think his stuff holds up, and I actually think I probably enjoy him more now than I have in years, really.
That's interesting, because I've sort of moderated on Tanahashi over the last maybe 18 months. You know, I
loved the Kenny Omega match.
I did too. I thought it was real good. I didn't even mind the interference, although I thought that they went to that well a little bit too much on that show.
Yeah.
But
and they seem to have backed off a bit since, but
I've actually had, there's been quite a few Tanahashi performances in the last 18 months to 2 years that I thought were really good. Mm-hmm. I still don't buy him as like an all-time great wrestler, to be perfectly candid, but he's had enough performances that have sort of raised my eyebrows in the last, you know, year and a half or so, that I am not above going back and re-looking at some of that stuff from the early part of his career to see if I'm completely full of shit or not. I mean, I don't know.
He used to be Marufuji level for you, almost. One's quite that
bad.
Yeah, pretty
close. But yeah. He's somebody that I might try and go back to re-examine. I don't know that he's ever going to be somebody that can be completely rehabilitated, because I kind of have the opposite take on Japanese wrestling after this process that you do, which again we'll speak to later. But, yeah, he's somebody that I actually am thinking about sort of going back in and taking a look at. So,
yeah. And Bull Nakano is someone I want to basically do as much retrospective on her career as I can, because she's been my favorite Joshi. My favorite, at least, that I've seen.
Okay. That's cool. I think – and she's somebody that seems to resonate a lot with people who are not huge Joshi fans.
Yeah.
She's very
accessible.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. So if you're somebody who's listening to this and wants to give that a shot, doesn't really know where to start, I think Dave might be telling you, and I might be seconding the idea that she's maybe the starting point, or a good one.
And you check out some of the matches that I've got in my 5-star articles that I've been doing on the 5-star matches that have been rated 5 stars by Dave Meltzer. Not trying to pimp my articles so much as just saying those are good matches to get your feet wet with. So,
well, I think you should pimp the article though, Dave, because that project I think was one of the guiding things that sort of drove your list.
Yeah,
in the sense that that's what you were watching. You know, that's what you were watching. So I think if people are sort of looking for an insight into what drove your list, that would be it. Now,
absolutely, yeah.
One thing I do want to ask before we go any further, because I didn't ask this at the top of the show, I probably should have then, but it's okay. Was there sort of an overriding criteria that you used whenever you were putting your ballot together? You know, not like in a universalist sense, but were there a couple of or multitude of things that you were looking for? You know, I sort of outlined a handful of things.
Yeah, you guys were much more academic votes than I was.
I just am curious.
I see that I've got work to do for 2026. Just basically, guys, I tried not to make it a favorite list, but I do think I'd be full of it if I said that wasn't coming into it. And
I think to some degree it does with everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's there's a difference. One thing I will say about that is I think there's a difference between a favorites list and a list that acknowledges that some people are your favorites, right?
Yeah.
Like, if this was a favorites list, like Bobby Bass and JT Smith would be in my top 10.
Yeah.
So, it's not really a favorites
and list. And I would have had Big Stephen Pettipaw on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's not quite the same thing, but...
But guys that I like, for sure.
Yeah. So, okay, so... Let's move on to your number 80 through 71.
Stuff that you've talked about, like duration of quality, those are great categories that I didn't really bring into it. But like I did try to look at longevity, how great you were in the ring, basically the stuff of how good you were and how important you were.
Okay.
Not necessarily how successful you were, because that's a different list.
Okay. Number 80, you had The Undertaker. Number 79, you have Tiger Mask. That's Tiger Mask 1. That's Sayama, for those people
yep.
who are, for some reason, unsure which one that would be.
It certainly isn't four. So.
78, Kerry Von Erich. 77, Dynamite Kid. 76, one of my five favorite wrestlers of all time, and somebody that we will be doing a show on very soon, because Dave's done some research on him, and we've sort of collaborated on this somewhat, Flying Brian Pillman. 75, Bob Backlund. 74, Ken Patera. 73, Yoshihiro Tajiri, who I believe was my 73 as well.
That's 70, hilarious. Yeah.
72, Chris Hero. And 71, beautiful Bobby Eaton. Now, Dave, this is, I think, where I could sort of find thematic qualities to the bottom 10 and your, you know, your 80s. This is kind of all over the place. You know, this is like
sure
a real...
Is, yeah.
spectrum of the GWE. You've got territorial stars, guys that are sort of legends for their gimmicks, guys that are considered influential, and then people that, you know, I've been obsessed with, and Tajiri and Ken Patera. So this is kind of an interesting range of guys. I mean, I guess what I would ask, my immediate question, you know, looking at this category would be, Tiger Mask is somebody who has come under fire at times from certain quarters mm-hmm. in the last maybe decade or so. And I actually, believe it or not, think he's probably gotten too much shit, which I think will maybe stun some people. But I want you to sort of make a defense of Tiger Mask and maybe at the same time Dynamite Kid if you'd like, because I think it's almost impossible to discuss one without discussing the other.
Yeah, absolutely. And basically, I've revisited their matches, and you know, I had fun with the New Japan set, kind of saying, "Oh, this stuff doesn't hold up." But I revisited for my 5-star match stuff, which there's actually controversy over whether Dave Meltzer actually rated that match five stars. But I mean, people need to find other things to worry about. So, anyways. I think basically it's kind of like it's become cool to slag on these matches. And, you know, like I first learned about Johnny. The example I'll give is I first learned about Johnny Saint from people on Segunda Kaida and DVDVR talking about him. And then it kind of became cool to like kind of like so he was kind of like the hidden gem that people found. And then it kind of became cool to move away from that. And then I see that he's in people's lists, so I feel like it's kind of gone back on him. And I actually think that it's kind of come... I feel that it's going to come back around, that people are going to look at Tiger Mask and Dynamite Kid. Kind of like people will say, oh, Hogan was actually better than we remember. And I think it's going to happen with Tiger Mask and Dynamite Kid as well. You know, you look at them in their matches in context, and, you know, they really stand out well. But I actually think they hold up really well, so...
I mean, you're never going to see me defend the series. I'm somebody who thinks the series is not very good, to be candid. Although there's one match in the series that I did enjoy, but as
a whole, the 1983 one.
No, I hate that match. The April 83 match is by hands down one of my least favorite matches ever, actually.
Okay.
But there's I think the match I like is from 82. But what I will say is, both guys did certain things really well. Like, I really like Tiger Mask's matches with Kobayashi.
Kuniaki Kobayashi, yeah.
Yeah, like, I like those matches a lot. Like, I like his match with Steven Wright. You know, I think it's fair to say that I don't know if I could name a single Tiger Mask match where I think he was the best guy in the match, to be honest.
Okay.
But I don't think he was terrible. You know, I think that's a complete misnomer. I don't buy that. And I really don't buy that with Dynamite. So
no, not at all. Yeah. I mean, if anyone really gets the slack for it, it's Tiger Mask. I mean, Dynamite Kid, there's a lot of things we can say about him as a human being, but he was definitely really good in the ring pre-injury. So
now I don't want to talk about Pillman here because we're going to do a whole show on Pillman soon.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably going to be the next show we do. So, and again, the research for that has already been done, so that show's going to happen. It's probably going to happen in the next, I'd say, 2 weeks. But what I do want to ask you about is Chris Hero, because he's a guy who you and I had roughly in the same area. I had him, I think, at like 79, so you had him a little bit higher than me. He's actually one of my regrets. I actually wish I'd had him higher. And I wonder, you know, you've got him sort of toward the middle of the list, maybe still in the bottom area, but getting close to the middle.
Yeah.
What's your big takeaway on Chris Hero?
That he's going to be way higher in 10 years. Here's the thing that I think is most impressive about him right now. 10 years ago, you know, Bryan Danielson started calling himself the best in the world, and as Ring of Honor world, as basically an indie world champion, he was able to get away with it because it seemed credible. Chris Hero is now starting to refer to himself as the greatest of all time. And with how good he is, you're able to watch it and feel like he actually believes that. And that people are actually going to start in the next 10 years to start putting him up in that conversation. Because he's so good right now. Like, I might be a lot to say he's as good as Danielson was, but he's getting so much longevity that he's got to get up there at some point.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Hero is when he's at his absolute best, he's the best wrestler on earth.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think he's always at his absolute best, although I don't ever think he's bad.
Yeah.
But when he's at his absolute best, like when I saw him front row at Mercury Rising of WrestleMania weekend in that opener versus Zack Sabre Jr., that's my match of the year.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought Chris Hero was incredible on that show.
And last year versus Timothy Thatcher, like
same deal.
Yeah. It was unbelievable.
Yep.
And I've seen him live a lot in the past couple of years, and he's always amazing.
Yeah, let me ask you about this real quick, and then we'll keep moving here. But to me, Hero is like maybe the only indie guy who I think really feels like a huge star. Would you agree with that? He feel like the presence wise in the building, he's the only guy, and I've seen a lot of guys on the independent wrestling over the last 2 years live. There's a lot of guys I've enjoyed, a lot of guys who I think are, you know, on his level as a worker, at least to one degree or another. But as a star presence, I think Hero smokes everybody. Is that something that you would agree with? You know,
I think he's certainly at the top of the list. You know, like, yeah, other guys are a lot of fun to see, but like he feels someone wrote in the I think even in the GWE stuff that, you know, if this was the 1980s, he'd be the top star in all Japan. He'd be the top foreign heel. And I think that's true. Like he's up in that vein of people that should be thought of that highly. And, you know, like I'm going to be probably in the month of May, seeing like Mike Bailey live. I'll be seeing Hero live, probably Bobby Roode as well. And Hero is the one I'm most excited to see out of all those guys. So
yeah,
against Colt Cabana.
I can't blame you. You know, I mean, I like I said, for people who don't follow me on Twitter and maybe just sort of listen to the podcast here, I've watched a lot of live wrestling in the last, you know, year or so. I mean, I've been to a lot of shows.
And I think you've been at shows more often than you haven't been at shows.
Yeah. I mean, as we record this, I'm going to a show tomorrow in Atlanta. So I can't speak, you know, any more highly about Hero than I am. Yeah, I, as far as him being a presence and being somebody that you absolutely want to see. Okay, I'm going to move on here to your – we're getting – like I said, we're inching toward the middle of your ballot here. So your number 70 is the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. Your 69 is Yoshiaki Yatsu. 68 is Shinsuke Nakamura. 67 is Manami Toyota. 66, Ricky Morton. 65, Ted DiBiase. 64, Arn Anderson. 63, Aja Kong. 62, William Regal. And 61, Devil Masami. Okay, this is interesting.
I've totally forgotten my list, that this is all news to me as well. So
let me ask you this. We're going to play a hot seat a little bit here.
Yeah,
a lot
sure.
of these are people that I had. Both you and I rated five Joshi workers. Yep. And two of the ones that I rated are right in here. They're Masami and Aja Kong. But I had Aja Kong much higher than I had Masami. You had Masami a little bit higher. Can you speak to maybe why you made that decision? I'm just curious, what made you put Devil over Aja?
I think I'm going to be doing a deeper dive into the footage is part of it. But watching the stuff with Masami, like, she's an awesome heel in the 90s and the stuff I've seen of her then. And just...
Totally agree.
Yeah, just the longevity of her stuff. And just the go without it not making sense is just really fun to watch. And the facial expressions. There's a few guys on our list that are big for facial expressions. And she's not a guy that's big for it, but she's one of them. Actually, another one's coming up for me. But, you know what? I need to see more Aja Kong. I've seen a lot of highlights and stuff, but I want to watch her and Bull Nakano are two that I really want to watch more of. And again, it was a late decision to actually put in a ballot, but I've seen enough of her to know that she's amazing. So I probably watched more Masami after your recommendation of her, and that really influenced it. So
yeah, I love her to death. I think she's great. She was in my 80s, but in some ways, she's the Joshi worker that was the biggest revelation to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought she was the most, like, I had the least expectation of her being as good, because when people think about that sort of first generation of great Joshi workers, she always gets lost. She gets lost behind Dump, behind Jiggy.
I'll tell you one thing. I saw that. I watched that match from, I think, 95 with her and Bull. And I'm like, okay, I see where Vanessa Craven gets her look. And you know I'm a big Vanessa Craven fan, so.
Yep. Have you seen – did you get around to watching the 88 match with Kandori, Dave?
No, I haven't, no.
That is one of my favorite Joshi matches, so get on that. But
I will.
One other thing I'm going to ask you here is Dusty Rhodes is on this.
Yep.
And I think your brief little blurb, because I can see your blurbs as I'm going through. If you don't mind, I'm going to read this.
If we did a top matches of all time, I will tell you that I would be a high voter in him versus Luger. So,
because your blurb is, he is known for his charisma, but his in-ring work was great as well. Now, that's very succinct.
Yeah. The Superstar Graham matches, just puts him here for me. Like, the Superstar Graham matches is, to me, the best work I've ever seen from either of them. I love his stuff with Flair as well. I love that First Blood match with Tully. I know the end was bad of him and versus Luger, but, I mean, it was a really cool thing for me, because I got past being just a WWF fan from watching Starrcade 86 and 87, and it was the end of two nights of marking out. That was the second last match, and I just freaked out watching it. And, It never got old for me. And I even like stuff like, I think it was, well, not Starrcade 92, but the Dome Show from 92. I would think it was him and Dustin against Saito and someone. I like that match. So
You know what match I love? The match from Greed in 2001. With Flair and Jarrett versus them. I think that's really a great match.
And so how about his stuff in ECW? I mean, you want to talk about longevity? Yeah. Wow.
That's,
you know?
Good.
Yeah.
It
and
really
I,
is good.
I even saw a match from 2004 on like an early Hustle show with him against Carino then. And it was, you know, it was good fun.
Oh, the matches he had with Terry Funk in the middle part of the 2000s on random indie shows were almost always super entertaining. So
yeah. And he even had an early Ring of Honor show.
Yeah, yeah. You maybe are convincing me that I'm a dumbass for not putting Dusty on my list, because he's one of my all-time favorites, and I didn't, but maybe I should have. Okay, so your number 60, I would argue in some ways is kind of the 90s or 2000s, bridging the gap, their version of Dusty Rhodes in some ways. That's The Rock. 59, Killer Khan. 58, Kintsugi Sasaki. 57, Dustin Rhodes, beating out his daddy by a 13 spots. 56, Viano 3. I don't play that game where we correctly say the Spanish. 55, Too Cold Scorpio. 54, Bam Bam Bigelow. 53, Dan Crawford. 52, Sergeant Slaughter. And 51, John Cena. Okay. Look, we could talk about any of these guys.
We could do another 8-hour podcast on my, with going through it. We could easily do it with this list again, like just do 4 hours on it. And I want to be careful about that, but yeah, go ahead and ask about who you were going to. I know one person you'll ask about. But.
Well, one person I really – actually, Killer Khan.
Killer Khan, yeah. That's of course, who I was mentioning when I was talking about facials. So.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Because Killer Khan, to me, is like the ultimate great match guy. Is that what gets him onto your ballot, Dave?
Yeah, and actually, you know what project I did today is I did put together a match list of everything I can find that – not necessarily that I had access to video online, but that I can find that there is footage of. And there's a lot of cool stuff that I really want to check out. But in terms of what I've watched, yeah, being such a great big match wrestler, like I even saw a match from Maple Leaf Wrestling with him versus Johnny Weaver that was kind of a nothing match, but was a lot of fun. You know, mostly because I saw him kind of stiff Weaver when Weaver went for a backdrop and really had to do all the work. So that's not a skill thing on Khan's part, but it sure was fun to watch.
Now, there's another person here. There's one person I'm going to hot seat you on, but before I hot seat you, I'm going to – probably my actual last cut, and you know, I probably said this about 20 people, but this was the person that actually I think was the last person that I actually moved off my list. Was Dan Crawford. So yeah. I was super excited to see you and our buddy Alan and other people actually rank him because I kind of hated taking him off.
Yeah.
So I want you to speak a little bit about Dan Crawford because I think he's one of the most underrated wrestlers of all time.
Yeah, I think he absolutely is. And in my match recommendation here, it's a match that you love as well. Dan Crawford and Armand Rougeau versus Chuck Sims and Sweet Daddy Siki. I don't care if I'd call it 5 stars or not. Like it's great. It's everything it should be. It over delivered. And all the stuff from Montreal, like there's a match with him and Tom Zink winning the Montreal tag belts from the Long Riders as well. That's really good. Everything from Montreal is really good. Stuff I've seen of him in the Maritimes is really good. So what really gets him over with me is, you know, the Canadian stuff plus all the stuff he did in All Japan.
He was great in Puerto Rico.
Yeah. Yeah. And, he even had, you know, I haven't really watched it, but I have a little bit of it. He did some of the early UWF shows in 1984 in Japan. He was a lower card guy who came in. So
now, and I think he's especially one of the all time great tag wrestlers that nobody talks about. So
yeah, and Doug Furness didn't do great when he came to ECW, but when you brought Dan Crawford in, it felt different. And I actually liked them in WWF.
I think they were underrated in WWF. I agree with that. All right. Now, this is the one I'm going to pick you on a little bit before we move into your top 50. Bam Bam Bigelow. He's a guy where I get – like, he has a great look. Kind of a guy that I was excited about at times growing up. But not somebody who I really personally feel stands the test of time. Now, obviously, we don't agree on that. So – just tell me why I'm wrong, or at least tell me from your perspective what the positives of Bam Bam Bigelow are.
Yeah, he was a great working big man. If Vader hadn't come along, he would have been, I think, the big man of his day. I love his moveset. I really like his matches. The fact that he was able to have a main event with Lawrence Taylor at WrestleMania and it wasn't a complete embarrassment. I'm not saying it wasn't at all embarrassing, but it wasn't because of Bam Bam. And, you know, I really like that WWF run. The match with Brett from King of the Ring was really good. I like his ECW work, his matches with Taz. That match with Rob Van Dam could is up there with Rob Van Dam's best matches, where he won the lost the TV title to him. So, and I liked him. I really liked that match with Barry from Starrcade that year.
Yeah, it's a good match.
Yeah, and he has good stuff. He has good stuff in Japan as well. So I maybe I could have him lower, but I honestly couldn't see having a list without him.
Fair play, fair play. We don't necessarily agree on Bigelow, but I can see why you included him.
And man, what a
So,
great look. Possibly the
oh, one
best
of the
look of all time.
all-time, yeah, one of the all-time great looks. There's no question about that. We're gonna move into your top half here.
Yep.
And your top half starts at number 50 with, talk about great facial expressions, Minoru Suzuki. Number 49, this will be a huge shocker to longtime listeners of this podcast. Leo Burke, number 48, Adrian Adonis. 47, Dick Murdoch. Very appropriate, those two are right next to each other.
You know what? I
46.
don't know that that was intentional either.
46, Owen Hart. 45, CM Punk. All right, another person who had CM Punk in the upper half, because I did. 44, Volkan. 43, Buddy Rose. 42, AJ Styles. And 41, Terry Gordy. There's a lot here to unpack. I'm not going to pick on you about Buddy Rose. I had him a lot higher, but I think it's cool that he just made your top 50. I'm just happy about that, to be honest.
Yeah, and I could honestly like deep dive on him and get him even higher than that, but you know I love what I've seen, so.
I think it's really cool that you included him as high as you did. I mean, look, the one person from this group that you got to talk about is Leo. And we've talked
Yeah.
about Leo at length on this show before, but
And
I
still
want you
hoping
to
to do a
speak
show
about him.
talking with him, but
Yeah, I want you to speak about him here, and especially in light of the fact that one of the all-time Dave Musgrave and honestly Dylan Hayes Holy Grail matches has recently popped up on YouTube. So why don't you speak a little bit about Leo and maybe a little bit about that match?
I mean, this guy, he was great everywhere. Like the recommended match I have for him is Leo Burke and Rocky De La Serra versus Yoshiaki Fujiwara and Nobuhiko Takada, which is how you pronounce it as far as I'm concerned, for July 1984 in UWF. Like, I watched this match and his performance, he was doing comedic stuff there that totally worked. I've talked about it on the show before, but he elbowed Fujiwara in the head and then sold his elbow, like the most comedic heel you've ever seen. And Fujiwara just totally went with it. It was amazing stuff. I really wish there was some of the, as much as Maple Leaf Wrestling in 1983 was a lame duck, I wish there was some of the house show matches from then. His stuff from Stampede is great. He's great in the Maritimes. He was pretty good in, you could tell he was declining physically by then, but it was fun to watch him in the All Japan stuff from 1988 and 1989. And then he went, with no knees left and became a good wrestler, like a really good main eventer in Puerto Rico.
He's great in Puerto Rico. Like, legitimately great.
Yeah, so he was great everywhere he went. He's actually become a friend, and he's just one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. I think if I had him any higher than this, it'd be a little biased, but I think if we had enough footage of him, he'd be in my top 10.
Let me ask you a little bit about that Rick Martel match, because that's the match that I alluded to earlier, and that's a match that you and I have talked about, geez, God, as long as we've
As
known
long
each
as we've
other.
known each other, yeah.
And I just watched it. I thought it was really good. I thought it was like a 4-star-ish match.
Yeah.
Like, it
And I think if it
probably.
was completed, it'd probably be higher than that.
Yeah. I mean, the only major knock on it to me is that we don't have it in a more full format. We've probably got like maybe 2/3 of it.
Yeah.
But, what do you think
At
of
least they fit in the solid 15 minutes of ring introduction, so.
it? What did you think of it overall, though, Dave? Just real quick, a brief sort of Cliff Notes review.
Probably under-delivered on my expectations, but that speaks to my expectations. I look at it; it's just great mat wrestling. What? How awesome is Martel to go into Halifax and put Leo over like that?
Amazing.
Yeah.
And the sort of dramatic finishing run. They did a great job making it feel like a big match. Everybody should check that out.
It felt like
Over on the.
it felt like people thought there was a title change coming.
Yeah, I think it's a great testament to both of those guys, both Martel and Leo. I don't know that it's my favorite Leo match. I'm really partial to the absurd boxing match with Invader One from Puerto Rico, which has RoboCop and Hector Macho Camacho in Invader One's corner, because it's the most randomly awesome thing maybe to ever happen.
That's Lucha
wrestling.
Underground before there was Lucha Underground, basically.
But this might be my number two Leo match after that. So it is up on YouTube. Everybody should go check it out. Now, one other thing I want to ask you about here in this category, though, is you've got AJ and CM Punk just a couple spots apart. I have both of those guys in my top half as well. What I really want to ask you about, though, is these are guys who sort of came out of that indie wrestling boom, but they had success in major wrestling companies. So as you're evaluating this, knowing how much of an independent wrestling fan you have been forever, really, how much of this is these guys being rated on that, and how much of this is these guys being rated on their success working for major companies?
I think if they just had the stuff in the major companies and weren't like the hometown guys made good kind of to me, I don't know if it would be – they certainly are – their stock goes up with their major company stuff from having done the independent stuff. But AJ, with AJ, it's all about his New Japan run. I almost said his TNA run. And honestly, good times in his TNA run. My recommended match is his cage match with Abyss from 2005.
Great match.
But, like, I've seen him live in Ring of Honor a bunch of times. I saw him have a match the night before you and I were at the same show. I saw him have a match the night before with Samoa Joe in Long Island, and that was great. And the New Japan stuff really puts him over the top to me, and honestly, if he has a couple more years like this, he could creep up towards my top 10.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I was just curious because, you know, I feel like...
Yeah, I think Punk's best work was in WWE by far.
You know,
although
what?
I like the Joe series.
You know what's interesting about that? I would have, before this process, I would have said Punk's best work was definitely in the WWE. But after going back through this process and watching some of the stuff from Ring of Honor, watching the original Summer of Punk angle, watching the Joe matches,
watching the Jimmy Ray feud. Yeah.
The Jimmy Ray feud is insanely good. You know, like, I have to say, while I still would probably give the edge to WWF, it's a closer gap than I would have thought. I think it's actually pretty close between what's better, at least to me.
Yeah, well, my favorite quote from him is when someone asked him when him and Joe were champs in 2008, and someone said to him about 4-5 years ago when you guys were in Ring of Honor, do you think you'd both be here at this point? And he said, yeah, we knew we were that good.
that's possibly the most CM Punk thing ever.
Yeah, and that's supposed to be his attitude, right? You know, that's
why it was successful.
That's supposed to be a top star's attitude, so. Yeah,
that's why it was successful. Okay, we'll move on here. You're number 40, which, interestingly, as noted before, Terry Gordy was at 41. So who's at 40? Dr. Death Steve Williams.
Again, I don't think that was intentional.
39, the aforementioned Rick Martel. 38, Chris Jericho. 37, Barry Windham. 36, Steve Austin. 35, Kurt Hennig. 34, Wahoo McDaniel. 33, Samoa Joe. 32, Shawn Michaels. And 31 is Dick Byer, the Destroyer. Now, I know Dick Byer is somebody you've had the pleasure of meeting before, Dave.
Yeah, I love that guy.
let me call you on the carpet a little bit. How much of this is a personal favorite, and how much of this is you think Dick Byer is an all-time great? Because he's a guy that a lot of people do think is an all-time great. So is this a case where maybe those two things meet?
I think it does, and I do think he's an all-time great as well, and I think, honestly, I think if I watched even more of his footage, I think he'd go up, and if even more was available, but there's quite a bit available on him. I like a match I saw with him and Baba, stuff with Mascaris as well, and just my story about him talking about those matches. I've talked about that before, but he's a wrestler's wrestler. Like, he is everything a pro wrestler should be, so.
Now, I think Chris Jericho stands out like a sore thumb to me in terms of somebody who I just don't agree with.
Did you have him in your top 100?
Didn't even come close.
He's
a guy who has sunk like a stone for me over the last 3 years, as I've gone back and watched more and more stuff. Having said that, I do want you to give a chance, because this is a guy who almost made your top third. So, you know, and there's been a lot of ragging on him on and off throughout the process. Some of it I think is fair, maybe not all of it. But what's your sort of case for Chris Jericho being this high?
I mean, I love all his WWE work. You know, he's hit and miss now, but he's not deaf. He's not. I mean, his match, I think one of his matches I saw with AJ was a little scary with how dangerous it got at times. But, I mean, I loved them at Mania together. He's been so good in-ring. Like, when you go back to stuff like when he was teaming with Benoit, that was some of my favorite stuff, probably from the first half of the 2000s. I liked him as champion there. I liked him as IC champion and all. God, it's creepy, but all the stuff with Benoit. WCW, he was great, and I really like his ECW run there. I don't know. Maybe if I went back and reviewed it like to the degree that you have, maybe he wouldn't stand up quite as much. But I've always just thought he's just such a cool, you know, product of that kind of journeyman style that you were able to have then. I mean, I think you're able to are able to now, but it's a bit of a different animal how it works now. So,
well, speaking of journeyman, I want you to talk a little bit about Wahoo, because this is a awfully high rating for Wahoo. I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't have a problem with it.
I just want to know why. Yeah,
one of the most surprising things, honestly, on your entire ballot. If I had come into this ahead of time. You know, there's a lot of things here, being a friend, like friends with you and doing these shows with you for, you know, 5 years. There are things that I would have assumed. Wahoo McDaniel being, you know, 34 is not something I would have assumed. So, you know, what gets Wahoo so high?
I might move him down, honestly, if I was to redo it right now. But I just – what probably my favorite match that I've seen with him is a match I saw from around 1982 with him and Sarge. And I was talking to Charles, I think, last night, and I compared it to Loki and Joe from 2002 in Ring of Honor. And they were just slapping away at each other and just pounding on each other. And it was just so fun to watch. And, yeah, I don't know. He just had such a physical style that I think would really translate well today and translate well to earlier times before him. And, you know, I'd like to see, obviously, some of his Johnny Valentine stuff, but I feel like I've seen enough of him that I probably haven't rated too high here for sure. But I'd certainly want him on this list. So I probably, if I was to redo it, probably have him somewhere in the 50s to 60s.
Okay. You know, the guy right above him, Samoa Joe, would be the last person from this group I'm going to ask you about. And here's basically the question I want to know. Do you think, and again, you're a guy who was watching a lot of this stuff and traveling to these shows at the time live, you know, do you think at his peak Samoa Joe is the best super indie pro wrestler ever?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's just like, and he's doing it again now. It's unbelievable the things this guy can do, and that it just his when he came back to Ring of Honor last year, like I couldn't believe how he just didn't seem to have lost a step, you know. Like, I mean, maybe he was slowed down a little, but that just meant that he went just as fast. It just looked like it hurt him more. Like, I couldn't believe the things he was still able to do. And yeah, I honestly feel like I could have him way higher than this. Easily top 20. I could have him up in.
Yeah, I mean that's. I didn't have him that high, but I think, you know, if you're somebody who values peak above all else.
Oh yeah,
I would struggle. I mean, one of my criticisms, and we'll get to this here in the second half of the show, but. One of my criticisms is that I think there were some of the people that claim to be have the most focused analytical rigor were very selective with how that rigor was applied. And I, you know, to me, Joe's one of those guys where if you're a peak guy, it's kind of hard not to have him in your like top 25. I mean, he's at his best. There were a few better.
I honestly felt like there'd be such a bias against recency and stuff like that that I honestly thought I'd get slack for having as high as I did.
You know what? I've got to say that there were people that I feel like I may have punished a little bit. Like Hero, I think in hindsight, I had a little bit too low.
Yeah.
But I think that there were some people that, you know, I think that that aspect sort of evened out a little bit when
Yeah.
it came to recency. There were people that
Well,
maybe were a little bit too high and.
I was really impressed with the ballots I've heard from the guy you and Chris and other guys that have listened to as well, and how high they'd have someone like Joe. Where did you have him? Do you remember?
Oh goodness, I don't remember where I had you off the top of my head. Actually, I had him at 80 because
Okay.
I had him and Cesaro and Chris Hero in a group, and I had Joe the lowest because I thought at his worst he was worse than the other two.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But I, you know, to me, I had Cesaro 78, Hero 79, and Joe 80, and honestly, I
I'm
could
glad he fucked
flip that
around for a
tomorrow.
little there in TNA because I'm glad he saved his body for now.
He was hibernating.
Yeah.
Moving into the top 30 here. That's an interesting thesis. We should start advancing. Number 30, Fit Finley. 29, Blue Panther. 28, Shinya Hashimoto. 27, KJ Muda. 26, El Dandy, which is almost where I had him. I had him at 25. 25, El Hijo del Santo. 24, Randy Savage. 23, Akira Taue. 22, Vader, and 21, Jun Akiyama. This is, you know, we're getting into the meat now. I think we're getting into an area where there's probably an increasing number of consensus. A lot of these
Yeah,
guys were
if
guys who finished in my top third, you know.
this batch of guys is one Keiji Muto away from being a lot like your ballot. So,
You actually had Finley higher than I did, so why don't you talk a little bit about Finley? I had Finley like around 55, 56.
yeah, I mean his that indie run was just fantastic. The Callahan matches, one of which I was lucky enough to be at live, were great. I got to see him in that really cool Harry Smith match as well. I mean, actually, I've seen him wrestle Harry Smith twice live. And his WWE work just before that was classic stuff. And I really like going back and watching some of his old stuff, like matches against Young David, against Johnny Saint. For some reason, I keep getting this. People talk about the match with him and Tajiri from Smash a few years ago. I like that match, but what I always get in my head is that whole speech he did about how you're making wrestling classic and in a new way. Like, I just can't get that line out of my head. It's kind of an annoying one, but yeah. Fit Finlay was just. When you look at a physical style of wrestling, like, he really hits it in every way. And I don't know if he's wrestled his last match. He probably should have, because he's getting up there, but I really hope we get to see some good stuff from his son, that's for sure. So.
Yeah, and I actually think his son's coming along really well. You know,
Yeah.
I think he's showing himself to be very sharp. He's actually one of my favorite wrestlers in New Japan, which will probably surprise no one. You know, I was happy to see that, you know, you got three luchadors in this sort of upper tier, one of whom is we'll talk about in a little bit, but you got El Dandy and Santo in here. I don't necessarily see you as a lucha voter per se.
Yeah,
So
I love those guys, so
I thought that
yeah.
was cool. Yeah, so why don't you speak a little bit about those two?
The stuff I've watched with El Dandy is probably, I mean, for some, it's not just because of the famous interview, but he feels very much like a Bret Hart to me, just in terms of his character, I guess. Like just kind of being the stand-up guy, and I don't know if that makes sense at all. But his in-ring stuff, he's just the stuff with Satanico from the late 80s and into the early 90s is as good a stuff as you're ever going to see. And I absolutely love that match with him and the guy right above him, Santo and Cassius, the three-way match. That match alone is kind of like the Pat O'Connor and Buddy Rogers match. I can get you right onto a list. So.
Yeah, I love them both, but
Yeah, and Santo, you know what? I could do even a deeper dive on Santo, but the stuff I've seen of him is great. I really, yet another one of the famous matches that Kurt Brown has been at live is him and Cassius from 87. Fantastic match. I love that match from When Worlds Collide, the tag match. And he's a guy who always hung in there. So
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and move into your top 20.
yeah, by the way, I could do an even deeper dive on Lucha and be higher on a lot of these guys. So yeah,
Oh,
go ahead.
sure.
Yeah.
I just thought it was cool because I don't really see you as a Lucha guy. So, my expectation was going to be Dave's probably not going to have maybe any of them up near the top. And you had a few up near the top. So I was happy to see that. But number 20, Jushin Liger. I do think it's interesting. I'm going to comment on this before I go any further. You had Liger one spot above Akiyama, and so did I, but I had them considerably higher. I had them in my top 10. I
Yeah.
just kind of think it's interesting that we both sort of paired them together like that.
I've actually was just watching a match when we started to talk tonight that could even drive Liger up a little further. So.
So 20, Jushin Liger. 19, Tatsumi Fujinami. 18, Eddie Guerrero. 17, Bryan Danielson / Daniel Bryan. God, it's hard to know what to call that guy now. 16, Riki Choshu. 15, Mick Foley. We'll talk about that for sure. 14, Toshiaki Kawada. 13, your highest rated luchador. He was also my highest rated luchador, although I did have him 10 spots higher. Negro Casas. And he was also the highest rated luchador in the results, in I think at 22, which to me is criminally low, and I'll whine
Yeah,
about
that
that
is.
later.
Yeah. Actually,
12.
I didn't quite catch that, and now I really get what you're saying, so.
12, Nick Bockwinkel, and 11, Bret Hart. Now, I think, there's several things I want to touch about on here. To me, the biggest elephant in the room, and this is not a commentary on his weight, is Mick Foley at 15. Because Mick Foley's a guy that I absolutely love at his peak. I think he's the ultimate try-hard guy. My brother Dustin, I think, made a cool point on the show he did with Will, where he said that Foley sort of is a guy that created his own style so that he could be a good wrestler, which I think was an interesting point.
That is a good point, yeah.
I, knowing that you're a Foley guy, I was still shocked to see him so high. Maybe I shouldn't have been. Maybe I should have gone back and listened to the previous think show we did. I just was not expecting to see him this high. So, what would you say to somebody who would say that that's crazy? I'm not saying it's crazy. I'm just curious. What would you say to somebody who thinks, man, that's a crazy high rating? Like, how would you sort of justify having Foley so high?
Even when his body was falling apart, I've never seen. Well, maybe I'm thinking more 2000, but maybe like later days, like when he came back. But I've never seen him be bad. Like I just, again, he's if he created his own style, it sure has been people who've tried to do it and they haven't been able to pull it off. I know Michael Landsberg on Off the Record with him was saying, how he influenced people to jump off roofs and stuff like that. And he said, but there are so many other little things I did well. And yeah, just I feel maybe he's even low. Just a great big match wrestler. But he was great at little matches too. Even like one of my favorite matches, one of my personal favorites would be him and Triple H from MSG when he came back as Cactus Jack. Love the matches with Triple H in early 2000. Anything he did in ECW, anything he did in WCW, even anything from Japan. Like I just can't get enough of this guy. He's probably my desert island wrestler, honestly.
That's cool. I mean, would do you think we should punish him for being responsible for Triple H getting over?
No, I don't hold that against Killer Kowalski either.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I can't. I don't want to hold anything against the guy, Killer Kowalski, either. He's by all accounts one of the nicest people in wrestling history. So, one other thing that stands out to me is, I think Bockwinkel and Brett are two people that a lot of wrestlers or a lot of wrestling fans see as similar wrestlers. I don't see it, but I noticed
Yeah,
that.
I don't find they are either.
Well, the reason I asked is because I know my buddy Matt D. I don't know that he would say that he sees them as similar, but he's somebody that has a very specific way of viewing wrestling, and he rates them both very highly. You've
I
got them.
really like all his comments, by the way, that I've been seeing.
Yeah, Matt's awesome. Like, What you've got them knocking on the door of the top 10, but just outside of it. So I guess rather than ask you why you have them so high, I'm going to flip
have them
this.
Together? Yeah.
And I'm going to ask why you have them together and why you have them just outside of the top 10. What kept them from getting into the absolute top tier?
There's 10 guys that kept them from being in the top 10 is essentially what it is. Yeah. I could easily have either of them. Honestly, top five at least. I was about to say I could have them at number one. Strangely, I think I'd be stretching to say I could have them top five, but I don't think I'd be stretching to say I could have Foley at number one. So,
isn't that weird? I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. And well, yeah. So Nick Bockwinkel, like, technical wrestling, like, this guy had it. He had everything with it. That 1986 Kurt Hennig match, that's up there with the best matches I've ever seen. I'm hoping maybe he doesn't feel like it after doing all this, but I'm hoping Steven does one thing that he's talked about, which is a greatest matches of all time poll, and I think that would rate really high. All his stuff in AWA, you know, like, I guess what puts him below Brett is at his worst, he wasn't great, is what I wrote. But at his best, he was as good as anyone. And Brett didn't have those dip matches that you would see with Nick. But, yeah, Brett to me is like the last cowboy. And I don't know. I just love the guy. One thing I'd like to note from this batch of wrestlers is I really felt, after listening to you and Chris, that I probably had Brian Danielson low. But when I go back and look at all this, like, I feel quite comfortable with where he is. But it's actually funny because I am a bigger Brian Danielson fan than yourself, I'd say. But I had him rated lower than you did.
Yep.
And I'd say you're a bigger Ric Flair fan than I am, but I am rated higher than you do.
That is absolutely true. I think that is a great point that I think totally dispels the idea that this was a favorites list. Because believe it or not, for as critical as I've been at Flair at times in the process, he's like one of my five favorite wrestlers ever. You know, and Danielson, I don't even know if Danielson would be one of my 50 favorite wrestlers ever. But when I went back and
he might
watched,
be him or Foley are probably my favorite. They're certainly in my top five.
Yeah, and when I went back and rewatched some of that stuff, I mean, I just feel like Danielson is just incredible. One other person I want to ask before we move on to the top 10.
Oh, and by the way, with Brett and Nick Bockwinkel, I'd say probably they were the hardest guys I had not putting at number 10. Now that all got.
Oh, yeah. Choshu at 16, I think, is interesting because I'm a huge Ricky Choshu fan. But I think most people who, you know, included a wide swath of Japanese wrestling probably did not end up having him ahead of Fujinami or Jushin Liger. So what sort of puts Choshu as somebody that's, you know, right up there knocking on the doors of the All Japan guys? I mean, he's above Fujinami for you. What got him so high?
I love Fujinami, but some of his stuff I found a little slower than Choshu's, and I like the slowness, but I really like the intensity of Choshu's stuff. Liger is someone that I'd maybe want to revisit it and, like, maybe put him. I wouldn't swap him and Choshu, because I do actually put Choshu ahead of Fujinami, but I'd maybe bumping up a couple spots. But no, I actually feel pretty comfortable with where they are. Choshu, like, I'll put it this way. Like, he had as much of an impact on the Japanese scene in the 80s. Like, he did it in New Japan. He had as much impact, maybe not quite as much as the NWO or DX, but it feels like that. And he did it in ring. And then he did it again in All Japan, in ring. And then he did it again in New Japan, in ring. Like,
I think he had more of an impact than NWO or DX.
Okay,
honestly.
Yeah. So it's not, doesn't feel like, well, I mean, not that you'd never do hyperbole, but I don't feel like it's hyperbole if you'd agree with that. So, yeah, I mean, and he did it with ring style. Like, he revolutionized the ring style in All Japan. You read some of Ditch's stuff on his site, and you really get a good feel for that. And I'd probably be, if we did do a greatest matches of all time, I'd be actually probably be the highest voter on his match with Fujinami from the Dome Show in 92. Mostly because it really, that was the match that made me love Puro.
I love anything with those two guys on opposite sides. To me, that's one of the all-time great feuds in wrestling that nobody talks about as one of the all-time great feuds in wrestling.
But
So.
Fujinami, well, actually, I shouldn't say this. I was going to say Fujinami doesn't have the classic with Killer Khan that Riki Choshu does. But in that match list I did, there's a couple of Fujinami Killer Khan matches. So maybe we'll see.
You got to get on that, Dave. All right, now we're moving into airy territory here. This is the top 10. Okay. And
And there's one that I know will stand out to you for sure. But
so let's just get into it. Your number 10, Rey Mysterio Jr. Number 9, Jerry Lawler. Number 8, Misawa. Number 7, Ricky Steamboat. Number 6, Kenikabashi. Number 5, I refuse to even try to pronounce Tenryu's first name because I always butcher it, so Tenryu it is. Number 4, Stan Hansen. Number 3, Terry Funk. Number 2, Ric Flair. And number 1, Jumbo Tsuruta. Now, look, there's a lot to talk about. I want to give you ample time on your number one. I think the first thing that I really want to talk about here is you've got Steamboat in the top 10. And I think Steamboat is a guy who has sort of, I don't want to say he's fallen out of favor because I think pretty much everybody still thinks he's a great worker. But he's a guy, he's compared to where the dialogue and discourse was on Steamboat when I first started getting into hardcore fan culture, he's no longer thought of like this. And I think. It's interesting because what you seem to be saying with your list is that we should still think of him as that tip-top level. So, Steamboat, talk about Ricky Steamboat because he's a guy where if this was a list that I was reading in 1999, everybody would have him in the top 10. But I feel like now this is kind of an outlier position.
I rewatched those Flair matches recently for my five star match project, and I think they've actually improved with time. I think they've improved with time partially because of how different the style is now, but they were ahead of the time. They were ahead of the pack then as well. I have you ever watched the I think it's from Washington, the March 18th host show match that's
The
been.
yeah, that match is awesome.
And like that was a new one for me, and just revisiting, I'd only ever watched the 2 out of 3 falls match once. Like, I don't know. As great as Flair is, like, Steamboat's part of getting him there, and the best babyface I think of all time, and probably one of the best sellers that I one of the best at selling that I can think of. I honestly, I could see having him higher even. It'd be a lot for me to put him at number one, but he's a perfect wrestler. That's the best way I can describe him. And sure, he never tried being a babyface. He sure did want to, but
You mean he never tried being a heel?
that's what I meant. That's what I meant. Yeah, he never tried being. Well, he didn't try being a babyface. He just naturally was.
That's true.
I think he's a perfect wrestler, and I think he. I know one of the things you mentioned was like people. Well, the guy, pe guy, people, guys, people remember in your area, like they talk about the Andersons, and people will talk about Great Muta and Lager that you grew up with. And to me, like everyone always brings up Steamboat around here, which is funny. You wouldn't think of that for Toronto, but you have to remember that he, what am I trying to say? That Crockett Promotions actually was basically Maple Leaf in the early 80s, and then he was coming here with WWF as well. So everybody always brings up Steamboat. It's actually funny, a couple years ago, I was at a WWF house show and WWE house show, and you'll get people saying, oh, it's not as good as wrestling used to be. But this lady was sitting next to me and saying that, and she goes, I used to come here in the early 80s. This is where I met my husband, and we used to see Flair and Steamboat. And it's like, yeah, okay, I'll give you guys a pass.
All the old ladies that I work with still lust after Ricky Steamboat. So there is
Yeah,
that.
well, me too.
That's worth noting. You know, I think another thing that sort of stands out from this is you've got a pretty healthy distribution of guys who were all Japan guys here in this upper tier. Now, Kawada didn't quite make the top 10, but you've got Misawa here, you've got Kobashi here, you've got Tenryu, you've got Hansen, you've got Terry Funk, you've got Jumbo Tsuruta. So as a broad question, are you somebody who's still all in on the notion of All Japan as the peak of wrestling?
Yeah, I totally am, and it's even I grow on it all the time. Like I probably haven't watched as much of it as I would like to have, and but every bit of it I watch, I enjoy every match I see of it. And Tenryu, like, that guy is amazing. I would say Tenryu is probably the lowest rated guy that I probably really considered for number one.
That was literally going to be my next question. So, you know, so I was going to ask you how deep your number one sort of consideration went. So you're saying it was five deep because Timber yeah. was your number five. So basically everybody in your top with me, I literally considered 20 guys.
Yeah. Which now, I love. Yeah.
Like, which is probably the least surprising thing on earth to you, but there are, you know,
that's
there
the greatest hyperbole of all time.
but there were really four guys that I strongly considered at the end.
Yeah, and they ended that up being would my probably top be four. It, the guys that I strongly considered.
And interestingly enough, Tenryu was also the last of those four on mine because he was my number four. So he was kind of the cutoff point for guys I considered as well. That's kind of
yeah. Well, and our first show was a guy talking with Terry Funk as the greatest of all time. And at that time, I decided he was. And then when we did the show with Loss, with Charles and Will about Funk versus Flair versus Lawler, I decided to Flair them. But honestly, like going through the All Japan set, I'd probably already done that by that time, but just watching a lot more of it recently with doing the five-star stuff, Jumbo just is a god for me. And there's a guy, why can't I even remember his name? The guy who has Quebrada.net, who I've ordered matches from recently, and he's a great guy to chat wrestling with, and he did a lot to convince me on Jumbo being number one as well. So,
I mean, here's the thing about Jumbo. I've already done my spiel on him, and I'm not going to repeat it. But I think he's one of these guys where you either get the essence of Jumbo the character or you don't. And if you get the essence of Jumbo the character, I think he sort of almost immediately becomes a number one contender. And if you don't, then you end up with me. And I think that's basically what it comes down to is – the people that rated him as highly as they did, yourself included, I think the basis for it was that you got him as a character beyond just a guy with a lot of great matches. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. Like, okay. Grumpy Jumbo is my second favorite wrestler. My favorite is the guy who was selling his temples after being in the Claw with Kerry Von Erich. So. Getting massaged by his ring seconds. You know, like that is the greatest moment in wrestling history to me. So.
Oh, that's like the great old man tag from All Japan in the 89 the tag league.
Yeah.
With Hansen and Tenryu and versus Baba and Rusher, and they do the spot where Baba gets toe-paid early and all the seconds come over and are massaging his chest for like 30 minutes. That's like my favorite thing in wrestling. So that's... Is there any other comment you'd like to make before we move on to the second half of the show, generally speaking about your list, about your top 10, about omissions, maybe guys you feel bad about, guys you know, I don't know. I'm not trying to press you here. I just want to say.
I guess, you know, like anyone in my top 20 are guys that could easily be higher. You know, like I look at a Negro Cautious, you know, like he's someone that I considered that I could see as a number one, but not that I considered as voting for number one. But this is my template that I'm going to work on. Not just looking at 2026, but, you know, I really enjoyed listening to everybody else talk about stuff, and I really want to expand my viewing of World of Sport and World of Sport, Lucha, and Shoot Style. That's where I really want to expand my viewing. And Joshi. Basically everything.
Dave, that is an awesome segue because kind of the big thing I want to talk about, and I don't
maybe after a break.
You know what? I will set the template and then we'll pitch to a break.
Sounds good.
The big thing that I want to talk about on the back end of this conversation, as we transition into the sort of feedback reaction show type to the results themselves, is I want to speak to what I see as the prevailing bias of the list. Maybe bias isn't even the right term, but the prevailing trend that runs throughout the results themselves. Because I think there was a lot of talk in the reaction thread over at ProWrestlingOnly.com about what the bias was. And I think at various points, people, you know, put their fingers on things that I don't think were quite right. And I feel like I, you know, have identified what I believe sort of happened with this list. So on the back end of this commercial break, we'll talk about that in some detail. And it speaks directly to those elements of wrestling and those styles of wrestling that Dave says he wants to become more acclimated with in the coming years. So anyway, you're listening to the Wrestling Culture Greatest Wrestler Ever rundown reaction show here on the PWO-P2BN Podcast Network. And in the on the back end, we'll be doing the reaction element. This first half was Dave's Top 100. Hope you've enjoyed it so far. Stick around after these commercials. We will be back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscullo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Main Event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. And relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series, led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We got sports covered too with the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast and the TJ McClun Show. PTBN tackles pop culture and irreverence with Richard and the Mailman, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, and if you like a hybrid of all of this in list form, check out Jordan Duncan's Rank and File. All of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network. That's the PWO PTBN Podcast Network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We've got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
And we're back. Listen to all those great shows, especially Chris Zellner's. That's the line that he always uses, so I figured I'd use it here too. Listen to all those great shows here on the Place to Be Nation. Read Dave's Dave Musgrave here's wonderful 5-star match write-ups also here at PlaceToBeNation.com. Read our buddy Parv's just published tonight as we're recording this synopsis of the Greatest Wrestler Ever project also at PlaceToBeNation.com. Do all that stuff at PlaceToBeNation.com. And in the meantime, we're going to jump back in here. This portion of the show is going to be dedicated sort of to reactions to the list. Now, I'm too lazy to pull the list up in front of me right now.
I got it.
And we can run down, Dave, if you want to, we can sort of go through it. But
yeah, I think that might be good.
I suppose I don't – my big takeaways, though, are not necessarily going to be takeaways about individual placements on the list. My big takeaways are broader takeaways, both negative and positive. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to get that out of the way now. But do you want to run through it from 100 to 1 real quick?
Yeah.
And you know, then we can sort of jump into the broader takeaways after that. Yeah. So sounds fire good. When ready.
So 100, Daisuke Ikeda. Number 99, Beerus. Number 98, Kerry Von Erich. Number 97, The Destroyer. Number 96, L.A. Park. Number 95, Sangre Chicana. Number 94, Shinsuke Nakamura. Number 93, Bob Backlund. Number 92, The American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. And number 91, Too Cold Scorpio. That's a pretty cool little grouping of guys. I know one of your concerns or one of your frustrations is the lack of lucha guys. At least there's some thrown in there.
Well, that's not really my concern.
Okay.
That's kind of why I want to save that discussion to the back end, because yep. The concern is not so much – I actually am pretty happy with the number of luchadors that made the top 100.
Okay.
If we're looking at it from that, I would consider that a positive.
And you know what I'll say? There's nothing better for a lead into this list than to have it start off with Daisuke Ikeda. Because, I mean, that's like, okay, well, that's something. If you don't have any idea why someone like that would be there, you need to check out more of them. And that's someone I need to check out more of.
So. Yeah, that is. He is a great 100. I agree with that. So, all right, let's move on to the 90s here.
Number 90, Ron Garvin. Number 89, Atsushi Onita. Number 88, Sami Zayn. Number 87, Cesaro. Number 86, Hiroshi Tanahashi. Number 85, Minami Toyota. Number 84, The Undertaker. Number 83, Rowdy Roddy Piper. Number 82, Dr. Death Steve Williams. And number 81, Yoshihiro Tajiri.
I think that's an interesting cluster of, like, modern candidates and then guys who are sort of, like, bigger personalities.
Yeah. I kind of forgotten that The Undertaker actually snuck in there, so I'm glad he's on the list. You know, I mean, at his best, he's been fantastic. So.
I thought all the, like, craziness about The Undertaker was one of the more bizarre things to come out of the entire process. Like, people frothing with the mouth of rage at the idea that The Undertaker's top 100 to me was just weird, considering some of the other people who placed really well.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was odd.
And I guess that's just part of the fact that I wasn't following along with the comments.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed to be that his making the list was one of the more contentious things for a certain segment of people over at Pro Wrestling Only. And look, I mean, we all have guys that we sort of eye roll when they pop up or that we're like, I don't know about that. I just think he's sort of a weird one to be indignant about because, I mean, this is a guy who's been a star for so long that I think he just is naturally going to appear on a lot of lists, especially if people grew up during a certain time frame.
Yeah, I mean, he's not getting in for his work with the Berserker, per se, but, you know, you got to look at some of his best work is really cool.
Yeah, and I also think the criticism that some people levied about, like, his matches sort of having this – even his great matches sort of having this air of inauthenticity and being the, you know, the self-conscious epic phrase. It's like, you know, I made this point at the forum and I may make it later on here. But I can't really take that criticism seriously if you're a fan of All Japan. Because to me, that's like the godfather of that style of wrestling is the All Japan style.
And if you're that concerned about inauthenticity, then go watch UFC. It's fake, guys. No, sorry, that's horrible. But
no, it's kind of true.
Number 80 is Tito Santana. Really happy with the attention he's gotten. 79, Terry Bam Bam Gordy. 78, Dynamite Kid. 77, Ravishing Rick Rude. Another guy I'm glad to see his attention. 76, Hiroshi Hase. 75, Hulk Hogan. 74, Atlantis. 73, Chris Jericho. 72, Brian Pillman. 71, Dick DeGo.
Yeah, that's like, with the exception of Togo, that's like, and Pillman, who of course I love largely for personal reasons, that's like a motley crew of people where I'm not surprised they rated, but I don't really care about them one way or the other.
Who are far away from your list, yeah.
Like, I don't, Like, Hogan, I actually completely get why he would raid. I have no problem with it, but I didn't raid him. Jericho, kind of the same deal. Yeah.
Yeah. Number 70, a man whom I've been fortunate enough to meet, Yuki Ishikawa. Number 69, Blue Panther. Number 68, Kurt Angle. Number 67, Jack Briscoe. Man, there's some fascinating pictures of Jack Briscoe that Steven managed to pick out. Number 66, Great Muta, Keiji Muto. Number 65, Shinjiro Otani. Number 64, Sergeant Slaughter. Number 63, Giant Baba. Fascinating picture of him. Number 62, Kiyoshi Tamura. I didn't really pronounce that great. And number 61, Bull Nakano.
Yeah, which I think that's right around where you had her too, isn't it?
Yeah, somewhere around
there. Yeah. I think you may have even had her at 61. Yeah, that's, you know, I mean, again, at this point in the list, there's really nothing. As the list was being revealed slowly over weeks, for people who don't know, this was revealed slowly over the entire month of April, basically. And I have to say that even when I disagreed with things, up until the 20s, and I'll pinpoint exactly where, I really had no problem with this, because to me, the list that really matters the most is my list anyway. Yeah. There's sort of an ownership quality to this, because I did work with Steven a lot on the organization of it, and I'll speak a little bit more to that, you know, on the back end of this.
I wish I had been more supportive of it, honestly. But
there's nothing here that, even when I don't agree with something, for the most part, up until we get to that top quadrant, there's really nothing that I go, ugh, like, you know, at all, because I sort of understand the perspective for why guys ended up where they were. So
yeah. Number 60, my guy, Volkan. Number 59, Samoa Joe. Number 58, Owen Hart. Number 57, Superstar Bill Dundee. Number 56, Jim Briggs. Number 55, Kurt Hennig. Number 54, Greg Valentine. Number 53, Dick Murdoch. Number two guys named Dick, pretty close together. Number 52, Dangerous Queen, Akira Hokuto. Number 51 is Andre the Giant.
I think Andre the Giant, even though I think that's way too high for him, if I'm being perfectly honest with myself.
I think it's pretty high, yeah.
I think he's like the perfect 51, though. Like, he's the gatekeeper to the top half of the list.
Yeah.
Like, I was complaining, like, God, Andre's too high as this was going on. Not, like, angrily, but, like, I don't think he deserves to be that high. But I do like the idea of Andre standing with a scowl with his arms folded to blocking off any pretenders to the top 50.
Yeah. Let's stretch out this talk just for a second, as I want to send you the best Andre picture of his in history that I found today. Check that out on Facebook.
Let's investigate this real quick. If I can, because my computer absolutely sucks and it's not letting me do anything right now. Hopefully this is a nude. Oh, it's close. It's basically an upskirt shot of Andre.
Yeah.
That's the only...
when you find a bigger blown up picture of it, it looks intimidating, but yeah, from this angle, it's just an upskirt shot.
Yeah, it's a lovely shot of Andre's underwear.
Basically, it's from a Japanese DVD box set on Andre, and it's just this really cool picture of him coming over the top rope. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Anyways, number 50, Billy Robinson, a guy I wish I'd considered a little more. Number 49, Aja Kong. Number 48, Fit Finlay. Number 47, Brock Lesnar. Number 46, CM Punk. Right around where I had him, I think. Number 45, Harley Race. Number 44, Tully Blanchard. Number 43, Rick Martel. Number 42, Ted DiBiase. And number 41, Ricky Choshu. I'm really happy with the attention Martel has gotten.
Yeah, I actually kind of think that the pendulum has swung a little bit far on Rick, and I sort of argued this on the show.
Yeah, that's
Chris.
True. Yeah.
Having said that, I would prefer people be overrating than underrating, which is what they did for decades with this guy.
Yeah.
So far be it for me to complain about him. And also Greg Valentine, another guy who I feel like has been really revitalized, somebody who I think certainly has benefited from the process that you know, not just with GWE, but with what I've coined years ago as the footage explosion. I mean, the idea that Greg Valentine would have been seen as a top 50 guy 15 years ago, unless you grew up in the Crockett territory, that would have been seen as so stupid an opinion that you wouldn't even be allowed to express it in polite company. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think is really cool with Martel is he's such a big guy that I don't think he doesn't get credit for being such a great big guy wrestler, right? Kind of he can really get into one of those Hoss battles pretty good. So, do you know what I'm saying? Like he's deceptively big.
Yeah, one of my biggest criticisms of Martel is that I don't think we have a great brawl from him. But I do think he's a guy who's sort of such weirdly good at a lot of things you wouldn't think he'd be good at, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like working out to Wham.
Yes, that's exactly what I meant, Dave. No, that's not what I meant. I meant that you could see him in a match versus somebody like Brad Rangins working the mat in a really compelling fashion, or you could see him doing like slingshot splashes and cool sort of offense yeah. that you wouldn't expect. Not that he's a huge Careless Whisper fan.
You know, that joke got over much better with you than I thought it would. I guess it's been a while since I made that joke, so.
That's a callback spot, folks.
Yeah, so. Number 40, Yoshiaki Fujiwara, someone who didn't make my list, and I should definitely examine a lot more of. Number 39, AJ Styles. No, oh God, I can't wait for tomorrow. Number 38, Mick Foley. Number 37, El Satanico. Number 36, Buddy Rose. Number 35, El Dandy. Oh, man, that is a fantastic picture that Steven found of him with a bunch of girls. So. Number 34, Chris Benoit. Maybe some discussion on him. Number 33, Ricky Morton. Number 32, Dustin Rhodes. And number 31, Shawn Michaels. You rated Chris Benoit, didn't you?
I did not rate Benoit.
You did not? Yeah. You know what? Honestly, if I was to rate him, he could have been as high as number one if 2007 didn't happen.
I didn't know what to do with him. Like,
yeah, and what I will tell you is I could see rating him. I couldn't see rating him number one. And I was like, I'll just leave him.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the issue with him was it wasn't a moralizing issue, because I actually think your point that you've made in the past about the Observer Hall of Fame is kind of the right way to view the moral debate, which is the idea that anybody gives a shit, that it's a real signal to women's rights and child advocacy and against domestic abuse to remove him from a paper Hall of Fame is actually kind of an insult to how serious those issues are.
Yeah.
So I totally agree with you on that point. However, with a list like this where you're sort of trying to critically detach yourself and analyze these wrestlers, yes, you're still playing favorites to one degree or another, but there's some pretense or at least hope that you're going to be able to analyze people fairly. I mean, how do you do that with them?
Yeah, there's no way I could. If anything, I'd underrate him if I was going to purely go by by just in ring, then I'd have him underrated. And if I was to go by, like, you know, it was just easier to leave him off.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think there's a satisfactory way to deal with Benoit. And I mean, no. That's the best I can say about it. You know, I think a lot of people would probably think that I'd be upset by Sean ranking this high. I have zero problem with it whatsoever. Didn't bother me in the least. He's a guy who has his fans, including yourself included. I'm a big fan of at least half of his career. You know, he's somebody that, believe it or not, was actually very close to making my list at the end of the day. So I have zero problem with Shawn Michaels ranking this high. If he had been like in the top 15, I might have kind of been like, I don't know about that. But 31, I have no issues with that. And I also think that El Dandy and Buddy Rose finishing as high as they did is two of the great surprises of this process. Because considering the fact there were 150 voters, a lot of whom probably are sort of peripheral to the PWO community in the sense that maybe they go and they lurk on the board and they're around to a degree, but they're not deeply versed in the sort of culture of podcast and geekery that some of the rest of us are. I think it's really neat that they managed to get as high as they did, because I would have thought that that would have been a real struggle. So I was actually really, even though I had both of them higher, I was really happy that they finished as well as they did.
Yeah, actually, I actually expected El Dandy to finish higher, but I'm really glad that he's there. So, yeah. So number 30 is John Cena. Number 29, El Hijo del Santo. Number 28, Beautiful Bobby Eaton. Number 27, I don't know why I had the beautiful in there. It's not actually written, it was just my actual adjective I thought of. Number 27, Jun Akiyama. Number 26, Akira Taue. Number 25, Barry Windham. Number 24, Steve Austin. Number 23, Shinya Hashimoto. Number 22, Negro Cassius. And number 21 is William Regal. That's a really high finish for Regal.
Yeah, I think that's another one where I think, the general viewpoint – you know, I think when you get into this territory, what you see is a lot of people who benefited – you see the polar ends. Like somebody like Casas, who I think was way too low. But even beyond that, that's not really my issue here, and I'll explain that.
I do feel Regal is probably too high. I love the guy.
I had Regal at 23. I really don't have a problem with him this high. I think Regal's one of these guys, like an Arn Anderson, like a Bobby Eaton, like a Ricky Morton, where people look at his career and say he was consistently great at what he was called to do. And I think what keeps him out of the top, the very top tier, is the fact that he didn't get more chances.
Yeah.
But
that's absolutely what it is to me, too.
To me, he's one of those guys where I can't, you know, because there was some controversy that he was, you know, too high on Twitter and other places. I you know, to me, that's – I get the perspective to a degree, but I think it's an odd sort of – hill to die on when you consider some of the people that are around him. I don't think he looks out of the company of the people around him, I guess.
I just double checked to make sure I didn't have him at like 21.
So, yeah. So, you know,
I love Regal. I honestly think 2026, I don't think he'll be higher on the list so much. Well, he might be. I think the biggest thing is that he's going to be with all the influence he'll have through NXT by that time, assuming he stays there, and he better, he'll be the American Karl Gotch.
I already think he's probably quietly been the most influential person in American wrestling for the last 10 years. Yeah. He just doesn't get the credit for it because he's not fucking the boss's daughter.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like a lot of the hires, and that, I forgive my misogyny if that's how it comes off to people. That's not my intent. It's just this is a instance where
I like to think about the alternative universe where China married Shane McMahon.
To me that is Regal has done a lot of things, and some of this I'm not going to go into, but some of this is pretty well known. He's done a lot of things to sort of influence the direction of developmental in the WWE in a positive way. And that predates the NXT thing by a great deal. So, you know, we don't – I'll put it this way. We don't have Daniel Bryan as we know it without William Regal.
Okay.
We just don't. I mean, that doesn't happen. Both stylistically and in terms of sort of other elements, it doesn't occur. So, anyway, continue on here, Dave.
Number 20, Tatsumi Fujinami. Number 19, Arn Anderson. Really high for Arn. Number 18, Randy Savage. Number 17, Bret Hart. Number 16, Nick Bockwinkel. Number 15, Ricky Steamboat. Number 14, Vader. Number 13, Genichiro Tenryu. I think I might have gotten that right.
Great effort.
Number 12, Eddie Guerrero. And number 11 is Jumbo Tsuruta.
This is the area of the ballot where I think being – you start to see some guys that you might go, oh, that seems high, like Arn or maybe Ricky Steamboat.
Arn is probably the ultimate number of ballots beneficiary.
Yep, I was just about to say that. I think this is really where these are guys who everybody thinks are great. Maybe they don't think that they're one of the greatest ever, but people who disagree on everything else agree that Arn Anderson is great at what he does. I think that's really the takeaway from
Arn finishing the top 20. I'm a huge Arn fan.
He's my second favorite wrestler ever.
His but his average vote is 35.49, right? So.
Yep.
But he was on 144 ballots. So.
Yeah. So I mean, that's a good showing. But all right, let's move on to the top 10 here.
Okay, I have to scroll back down.
I busted you.
Yeah. Number 10, Jerry Lawler. Number 9, Toshiaki Kawada. Number 8, Kenta Kobashi. Number 7, Rey Mysterio Jr. Number 6, Jushin Liger. Number 5, Daniel Bryan. Number 4, Mitsuharu Misawa. Number 3, Stan Hansen. Number 2, Terry Funk. And number 1 is Hiroshi Tanahashi. No, it's not. It's Ric Flair.
I don't know how you feel about the top 10, Dave. Like, to me...
I feel it's I like it.
Here's what I would say. And this is how I'm going to kind of segue into my more broader discussion and criticism of some of this stuff. I think in a world where only American wrestling and American Imperial Adventures exist, the top 10 is a wonderfully fine top 10 that I have zero problem with at all. Yeah. And in fact, if somebody turned in a ballot and that was literally their top 10, I would be fine with it. I would not have any – I mean, I wouldn't think it was weird. I wouldn't think it was off base.
That's good because it's pretty close to what mine is actually.
I would be pretty fine. I mean, to me, that's a – it's a more than acceptable top. There's nobody in there that I look at and go, that's ludicrous. And in fact, there's some people in there, namely Ray and Jerry Lawler, where I think it's a great surprise that they did as well as they did. I mean, to me, Lawler, you know – knowing some people left him off altogether and some other things, I thought there was a real danger that Lawler was going to finish much lower than he deserved to. I thought there was a real danger that Ray, with some of the criticisms people have of him, was not going to be anywhere near as high as he was. So I was overjoyed that Ray finished as high as he did. I had him at 5 on my ballot. So to me, those are successes. I had Terry Funk at number 1. He finished at number 2. I can't really criticize that, you know.
Because you're a big Flair fan, right?
Yeah, I mean, I had Flair at number 11. I do want to speak a little bit about Flair, and here in a minute. But what my biggest criticism of this, and I don't know if I would feel the same way if I had just been a participant in like the voting, if I hadn't been somebody who sort of helped construct the process with Steven. You know, and did things of that nature. I'm by no means suggesting I was nearly as heavily involved in this as Steven, but he and I are the ones that sort of set the ground rules. We set the idea for the nominations process. We like all that stuff was something that we sort of collaborated on together. And we sort of collaborated at times throughout, even beyond that with how we were going to deal with the rollout, how we were going to deal with certain other things. So I do feel a degree of ownership over the totality of the list and the final product, and I don't really want it. And the reason I don't want it is because I'm going to get myself in trouble for saying this, but I don't care because people say things all the time that are at least as inflammatory as what I'm about to say. To me, this list comes away as a bigoted list. Now, I don't think that the people who left Lucha off of their ballot altogether are Nazis, are racist, are bad people. In fact, in most cases, I think it's one of two things. Probably in almost every case, it's one of two things. Either they just never got around to watching it, or they did get around to watching it, and they just couldn't overcome the style. They just didn't like the style.
Yeah, I certainly hope it's more of the first. I don't know how you can watch Lucha and not enjoy it at least a little.
Well, but that's something that came up over and over throughout the process. It's something that came up – it also came up with Shoot Style. And it also came up with Joshi. Myself even to a degree with Joshi, although I've sort of learned to love aspects of Joshi. It did not come up as much with World of Sport, but I think if you look at the final product of World of Sport, no World of Sport wrestler made the top 50. I mean, the highest ranked one was Jim Briggs at 56. And my big takeaway from this is that basically the bias in this list, if there was a bias in this list, the bias was not a bias that said American wrestling was better, which is what some people presumed. It also wasn't a bias that said Japanese wrestling was better, which is what some people presumed. What it was a bias in favor of what I call Americanized wrestling. Because the reality is that modern Japanese wrestling, even with certain tropes that are different than what you might see in the United States, Japanese wrestling is it's the very closely related cousin of American wrestling. I mean, I made this joke on Twitter, but I was dead serious when I made it. Japanese wrestling is basically the equivalent of General MacArthur walking off the boat in the post-occupation or post-war occupation Japan, pointing a gun at people and saying, "Learn a Western trade." I mean, that's literally what it is. It is a textbook example of cultural imperialism. Now, we can argue about whether or not it's good or not in terms of what it's produced, and I think all of us would agree that it's produced a metric shit ton of great wrestling. But it is a very Americanized product, with the biggest deviation being shoot style, which did not do well. I think those styles that were unique and distinct and had identities of their own that were outside of the sort of American paradigm failed. And like, they just failed to resonate with people. And again, I don't know if it's that people didn't get to them or if it's that they feel alien to people, which I can even respect to a certain degree. But as somebody who was involved in putting together the process, I don't care that Negro Casas finished 22. What I care is that no luchador made it into like the top 20 or top 15. To me, that is an indictment, because what it says to me is this is a list about a very specific American vision of what pro wrestling is. And when I think about lucha, I think about a tradition that goes back 80 years that's produced arguably in terms of volume more than certainly more than Japanese wrestling, not even close, and maybe as much or more than the United States wrestling in the relative time period. And to me, to not have a single person from that style make the top fifth, I can't put my name on that with pride. I just can't do it. There's something about that that instinctively bothers me. It's a sort of supremacist view, whether it's deliberate, accidental, some narrative that I'm reading into it myself, whatever the case may be, is something that I can't endorse, because this is coming from somebody who's talked about how I don't believe all styles are created equal for a long time. So, you know, somebody like Otani's Jack, who's been critical of that talking point, could throw this back in my face, I suppose. But to me, there's something about the idea that a tradition of wrestling that was so culturally rich did not have a single person in the top 20 that I can't get over it. I can't get over it. I look at that and I say, this list is a failure. The collective list is a failure to me for that point. And I say that even knowing that many of the people who don't get lucha or whatever are people who I like a lot and respect a lot. And I don't think they're bad people. I don't think they're racist. I don't think they're nasty people. But I think the end result of the list is a very specific America's right, wave the flag, you know, imperialism's great message. I can't get behind that. I mean, to me, the uniqueness of World of Sport deserved better. The uniqueness of shoot style deserved better. The uniqueness of lucha deserved better. Even Joshi, which you could argue that I underrated. My highest rated Joshi's worker was at 29, Aja Kong.
I think a lot of people did the deep dive into Joshi, and there's probably less, myself included, that did it into World of Sport.
Yeah, I mean, look, one thing I want to be clear about is I don't know how many people just rejected these styles as things that don't resonate with them, which is entirely fair. I mean, I can't sit here and say that people who did that are bad. But what I can sit here and say is that somebody who's sort of interested in the history of wrestling And as somebody who is not completely enamored with the idea that America is a Christ-like paradigm to refer to at all times, the idea that the distinctly American version of pro wrestling is the only thing that exists in the top 20 is something that I kind of find nauseating.
At the same time, like, do you think it changes at all when you span out a bit to look at the honorable mentions? Like, Terry Rudge being 163 is actually really cool.
Oh, I think if you – this is – you know, I think that the – there are many successes. Like I said, there's more luchadors to finish in the top 100 than I would have guessed.
Yeah, Sangre Chicana. Like, that's a really cool finish.
Yeah, I mean, there are positives, and there are things that you could pull from this that I don't want to sit here and say that I think this is sort of a wholesale denunciation of all these things. But I do think it's telling that I think Lucha appeared on like 71% of ballots. And, you know, to pick, you know.
And you think it should have been higher?
Well, look, if people conclude that it's the style they don't like, I can't say that it should be higher. But what I would say, and this is sort of my end game conclusion that sort of gets to a personal takeaway, is I actually feel more alienated as a fan after this list than I did before. Wow. Because to me, the end game is my vision and my idea of what is great pro wrestling is radically different than a lot of other people's, because I don't give a fuck if it's an explicitly American thing. And don't get me wrong, I don't think the majority of people think along those terms, but I think the end result sort of bears out that there is a, if not a, an overt bias, at least an implied bias there. And to me, you know, basically my takeaway isn't people should, you know, be forced to watch more Lucha and learn to love it. I think that's ridiculous. You shouldn't be forced to watch anything and learn to love it. It may just not resonate to you. But my big takeaway on a personal level is I see myself at this point as sort of a man without a tribe on that front. I can't really identify closely with a broader wrestling culture, no pun intended, that doesn't think a style as rich as Lucha merits anybody in the top 20. Like to me, that's, it speaks more to where I'm sort of as a fan at the end of this list than I think it does to any individual person or even the collective other than me. It just, I look at it, and my takeaway, and this is admittedly very personal, and some people might think that it's sort of an emotionally reactive position to take. Maybe even it is to some degree. But as the, you know, the last couple of years have gone on, I've become increasingly more interested in modern wrestling than classic wrestling. And I think, honestly, this has reinforced that even more. I find myself on the back end of this project much more interested in sort of talking about and diving in and getting even more deeper into the modern product than the classic product, because I think the classic product is a lost cause. I think people have already sort of decided what their vision is, and I don't think there's going to be a lot of deviation from that in the macro sense. In the micro sense, there probably will be, but in the sort of bigger picture sense, I think it's probably going to stay basically the same, in the sense that you're going to have people who are sort of in, they have a vision of what they think pro wrestling is. It's basically what American pro wrestling is. And if it's something that's outside of American pro wrestling, they're not going to get it. They're not going to like it for whatever reason. They're fully entitled to that. But I find it increasingly difficult to relate to those people as fans. I just don't. The universe that I operate in is moving farther away from that universe. And I think the areas where that universe overlaps is increasingly small, because another big takeaway from this to me is that I just don't – I think there are a lot of cool discussions to be had coming out of the Greatest Wrestler Ever project and the results, but I don't think any of them are really going to be had in the place where that – I don't think PWO is a place for them, unfortunately. And that's not an indictment on Charles or any of the posters at PWO. That's always going to be my home, and to the extent that I'm posting on a message board, which will probably be less than ever, to be perfectly candid. But I don't, to me, like, for example, this issue of whether or not I'm off base or not about this sort of Americanized wrestling bias, it'd be a great discussion to have. I really don't think it's something that's going to happen. I think it's, you know, I think people are going to take it too personally and, you know, oh, you hurled the term bigoted out. Oh, fuck you. You know, I'll say whatever I want. You know, people have been using much stronger language throughout this entire process. And I don't really see how my use of that term should be freaked out over when I went out of my way to qualify it after the fact. But I don't think that discussion is going to be had. I think there's an interesting discussion to be had about whether sort of feminism and other sort of egalitarian ways of looking at broader culture is going to influence the way we look at women's wrestling in coming years. And I think that's a fascinating discussion. I'll be honest, I don't think it's something – I don't think it's a discussion that can be had at PWO. I don't. I think people – there's a sort of a reactive mentality where people sort of cower away from the idea of discussing those issues because there's such an emphasis on the only and pro wrestling only, which I love because it's kept a lot of the crazier strains of things out of things. But I think we've reached a point where those sort of issues are really important and really relevant to discuss. And unfortunately, I don't think PWO is a good place for it. I think there's an interesting discussion to be had about the idea that the reason Ric Flair rated number one is the fact that he's sort of been the template for which great wrestlers have been judged forever. That the idea of what a great wrestler is largely Ric Flair, because Ric Flair is the guy that's career came to be right as Dave Meltzer was coming to be, right as tape trading was coming to be. But there's so much sort of venom and piss and vinegar around Ric Flair that you can't really discuss him there anymore. And I think that that's sort of one of the unfortunate byproducts of this, is that I think there are actually a lot of cool discussions to be had. I just don't think they're going to be had. And that, to me, is really unfortunate, but I don't know that there's any way around it. And I guess this is a really long way of me saying that I'm probably going to be doing as many or more podcasts as ever before and tweeting like a wild man as much as ever. But as far as long-winded posts over at ProWrestlingOnly.com, I don't know that I'm going to be doing any for a while because I just don't think – I think that
– And this isn't at your friends that are there necessarily.
No. It's not a comment on any of the people there. It's a comment on – where I think I am as a fan right now.
Okay, yeah.
Because there are conversations that I want to have that I'm not sure you're allowed to have there. I'm more interested in modern wrestling than ever coming out of this, and I'm not sure that that's necessarily been a place where modern wrestling gets its due, frankly. I don't think it's lambasted there, but I don't think people aren't talking about it to the degree that I would. And while you could say – that's on me for not starting starting threads talking about it, I don't think there'd be much interest anyway. The point of all this is, this is going to be very boring to a lot of people, but the point of all this is that the end result of GWE to me is kind of fascinating because I don't regret it. I enjoyed the hell out of doing my list. I enjoyed all the shows I did. I enjoyed talking all these people with all these folks. But I'm not interested in the greatest matches ever poll because I've never been more interested in just talking about wrestlers than now. I have no interest in a matches poll. I'm not interested in sort of obsessively looking at like individual matches from a particular time period anymore. I'm much more of a grab bag guy. That's sort of just how my tastes have evolved over time. I'm much more interested in modern stuff for a variety of reasons. And to me, in many respects, the Greatest Wrestler Ever project feels like a bookend. It feels like the end of something for me, and now I'm just going to be doing something a little bit different or maybe more overtly different than I have been in the past. And I don't think that's really a negative.
I think one of the things that's happened too, though, is that from my understanding, there's some really weird ballots that came in.
Yeah. There were some ballots that I think would be considered eclectic.
Well, I know Scott Steiner. I mean, it's right in there that Scott Steiner got number one from someone. I mean, I have no idea how that happened.
Well, I mean, the guy posted on the forum, talked about it. Somebody else voted for Too Cold Scorpio number one. I mean, there's always going to be outlier ballots, especially when you have 150 ballots. You know what I mean?
Like, and I think it's awesome that there was that many ballots.
Oh, I am somebody who always wanted to err on the side of inclusion because I think once you start to ironically, one of the reasons I wanted to err on the side of inclusion is I didn't want it to be a list that was all about Americanized wrestling. So I may have lost that battle, but I lost it with good intentions.
With vim and vigor.
Yeah. That's how that ended up. I don't know. I mean, that was a long filibuster, Dave.
Well, what I got to ask you is, what do you think of Ian Rotten placing at 440?
Ian Rotten's a great wrestler. He's very good.
Yeah,
I have no problem with that.
Well, and you know, I think that's one of the things too. Is like anyone who's just deciding to go and check out the poll, really go through the honorable mentions because that was just as much fun to me.
Yeah, I would. I mean, to me, that's as fun, maybe more fun than the actual list itself, because that's where you get to discover the new people, I think.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. And like, I really liked hearing about Terry Rudge. Like, that's a guy that's I'm fascinated with to check out. And he's on. I mean, I want to check out a lot of Otto Wands as well. Not that that's someone who came up a lot, but there's guys I want to check out, and he's on the list. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. Everything I just said probably sounds more negative than I actually meant it, because my takeaway is not. Again, I'm glad I did this. I had fun doing it.
You're glad other people did it.
I love that other people did it. Including people that I never thought would do it in some cases. I'm happy with my list. There's almost nothing. It's crazy. Like, I thought I would look back and be like, oh God, I look back at it today and there's like maybe two changes I would make. Like I'm actually very, very happy with my list, but, and I'm oddly enough, if we pretend that the only wrestling that exists is Americanized wrestling, I actually don't have that much of a problem with the final product. I think really, you know, it speaks more to, I think, the reality that, you know, it's one thing to be a contrarian, as people accuse me of, or to be an outlier, or to have positions that aren't consistent with what other people's positions are. I don't really mind any of that. To a degree, I enjoy it. I enjoy pushing out guys that I like. I enjoy sort of revisiting people that I think have been unfairly maligned. That, I think, is one of the most fun parts about anything that you do in wrestling geekery or wrestling fandom, is things of that nature. However, it is very unsettling to me that a diverse voter pool concluded that, you know, Lucha basically should be a third world category. World of Sports should be a third world category. Joshi should be a third world category. Shoot Style should be a third world category.
Joshi did well in it. It's World of Sport that really got that didn't come out. That needs more exploration by people.
Yeah, and I mean, again, it could be an exposure thing. You know, it could be a... I just don't like the style thing. Either one of those things I think is perfectly valid. I don't think people are wrong for watching something and saying, I don't like this. That is a perfectly valid opinion to have. However, the chances are that because one other thing I want to touch on briefly, I know it's late, Dave, but I sort of came away from this process with a very cynical view of All Japan. Because even though I had all of the guys you would expect in my top 30, with the exception of Jumbo, and he made my list, to me, as I went back and watched a lot of that, my big takeaway was, okay, this is really good, but if this exact match happened on an indie show in 2004, many of the people who are praising it would viscerally.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, with no variation, like, there, like, you got guys taking head drop suplexes on the floor 2.5 minutes into a match. I mean, if fucking Loki did that, even Davey Richards, who I don't like at all. I mean, it would be maligned forever as the one of the worst crimes in human history. So I'm very
your
cynical.
Cat appears to agree.
Yeah, she's whining here, but it's I'm very cynical. I'm very cynical about the idea that that's a category that we can.
I lost you for a sec there.
I got another call here, but I'm very cynical about the idea that that is. I don't know. I'm sounding way more negative about this than I really wanted to. But the reality is, I think All Japan gets a pass that. Sorry, I'm getting bombarded with phone calls here. We can't ever do an episode of this show without somebody's audio going out or phone calls occurring. To me, you can't. All Japan gets passes other styles don't get. That irked me throughout the process. And also, there were sort of things that I don't quite understand still. Some of the debate about input versus output. And the people who were very heavy on output, and I don't get why we don't count 3-star matches, but we count 4-star ones. To me, that's completely arbitrary and designed for a very explicit reason. Like, I don't get the idea of the way people think about peak. I find that kind of weird still, because I think, you know, we count years for guys as peaks that are based on really thin amounts of footage in some cases. In other cases, we don't. I just feel like there's a lot of sort of inconsistency, and I don't have a problem with that if we're taking a sort of broader view of the list. But if the idea is to focus on sort of a universal criteria perspective, then I would hope that you would actually be applying the universal criteria. I don't know. I just feel like there are areas where the sort of deep analysis worked and areas where it failed. And we're all guilty of it. I'm guilty of it to a degree. You know, I remember when I did my list and I got to the end and Stan Hansen was as high as he was, I struggled to come up with an idea for why I really thought Hansen was better than Liger, for example, other than the fact that Hansen just felt better. You know what I mean? Like, there is a point where that sort of becomes part of the calculus. But I don't know. To me, GWE was a worthwhile process,
I love it.
But I
wasn't as heavy. I didn't deep dive as into the process all along as you did. So,
to me, it probably marks the end of me sort of investing a lot of my time in older classic wrestling for a while. I mean, I'm never going to go away from that altogether. I've been too much of a fan of it. But it'll
come around a bit. Yeah,
you know, that's something that I'm gonna, you know, put a bookmark in for the time being, and you know, I think I'm probably going to be increasingly getting away from that sort of, you know, if I'm gonna be talking about classic, you know, older wrestling, I want to be talking about older wrestling with you on this podcast, where there's a sort of a conversation and or me yelling at the top of my lungs at 2 a.m. As opposed to having the same tired, boring debates that don't really go anywhere and people sort of ignoring what I consider to be really important issues. I'm kind of done with that. And that sounds like an explicit indictment of PWO. That's absolutely not the case. I think ProWrestlingOnly.com is hands down the best wrestling message board on the net. I don't think anything else even touches it. I will still be visiting it every day, but as it regards sort of old school wrestling, classic wrestling, whatever term you want to use, my participation levels will probably be at an all-time low for a while.
Still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Babbling.
Thought you lost for a second. I what I really appreciate is that you're saying that, like, let's have the conversations at this level, and I definitely want to get back into doing some more of the shows and stuff, and now that the audio is a little fixed up on our end, I think we'll be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to do that Brian Pillman show soon, and, you know, I mean, we've still got another show that I know we really need to do and I want to do as well.
Yeah.
You know, we'll be back sooner rather than later, I think.
Which we've said before, but I honestly, like, you know, I've still, in, over the past 2 years, still been getting my head back into the game after, you know, having some difficult times there, and, you know, I'm just really itching to get going and stuff now, so.
Well, after the last hour here of me being Eeyore, and I suppose it's
not I would prefer. I was going to call you the Anwar Alaki of the internet community.
The that might with my beard that might work. I guess it's time to wrap it up. Yep. Dave, where can we follow you on Twitter? And also plug your writing.
Yeah, so Twitter, I'm a Wrestling Culture. You can usually find me at. Facebook, I'm on, and the biggest – I've been doing a fair – I think 2016 has been the most writing I've done in quite a long time. So I've been writing about the – basically reviewing every match ever rated 5 stars by Dave Meltzer. I've also been reviewing quite a few shows, got some Ring of Honor ones in there, Evolve, some New Japan as well. And just coming up with little things to write about here and there. I did an article on Ring of Honor – what are you doing? Japanese wrestlers in Ring of Honor. A number of things I've been doing, and it sounds like Dylan's patting his microphone there. And Dylan, let's plug anything you're doing, buddy.
Right now I am getting busted sending a text message as I do this from my phone.
Oh, that's what you were doing.
Beyond that, you can follow me on Twitter at Dylan Waco. That's DylanWaco. You know, I'm on so many podcasts on and off that it's kind of pointless to try and plug them all. You know, I probably should write more reviews, matches and stuff, but it's weird. The older I get, the less interested I get in match reviews because I feel like it takes time away from me actually being able to watch matches, which I know is weird to say. But maybe I'll start doing it again. We'll see. I'm sort of tentatively playing with the idea of doing some other stuff. So if you want to you know, if you listen to the last hour of me crying and whining and accusing close friends of being bigots, then you can follow me on Twitter for more of that. on that note, I think we're ready to step out for the evening, Dave.
Sounds good, buddy.
Great time as always. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and hopefully we'll be back sooner than later.
And that's a wrap.